From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you so much. Thank you, everybody. Thank you so much. Thank you. We got a great show for you today. We got Grammy-winning jazz vocalist Kurt Elling. He'll be here with us later. Yes, that's exciting. Especially, he's going to answer every question entirely in song. But first, it's Valentine's Day next week, and so for this show only, special offer, we're offering a special prize, not just Carl's voice on your voicemail, but Carl's seductive voice on your voicemail.
This is Carl Castle. Bob isn't here right now, but Carl is.
He's pining for you, so give us a call. The number is 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hey, Peter, this is Trisha, and I live in Dorchester, Massachusetts.
Dorchester? How are things in Dorchester?
They're pretty fine, thanks.
What do you do there?
I waitress, which is funding a hobby of being a novice flame worker, and I'm doing a life coach training program.
I'm sorry, a novice what?
Flame worker. It's I make glass beads and buttons in a stationary torch.
And you call this flame working?
I don't call it that. it's called that.
I'm sorry. It's not your choice. It's not like you're sitting there going, I shall call this flame working. You know. Well, welcome to the show. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First, say hello to one of the women behind the Washington Post's reliable source column. Is Ms. Roxanne Roberts.
Hi, Trisha.
Hi, Roxanne.
And an author and humorist who will be appearing on the Moth main stage in New York City on March 16th, Mr. Tom Baudette.
Hi, Trisha.
Hey, Tom.
And a comedian performing March 2nd at the Theater at Westbury in Westbury, New York, Ms. Paula Poundstone.
Hey, Trisha.
So, Trisha, welcome to the show. You're going to play Who's Carl this time. Carl Castle will now read you three quotations from the week's news. Your job, correctly identify or explain just two of them. Do that. You win our prize, Carl's voice on your voicemail. Are you ready to go?
Do it.
All right, let's do it. Your first quote is from prominent conservative pundit Eric Erickson. He's finally announcing which candidate he's backing.
I would honestly prefer the sweet meteor of death.
Mr. Erickson would prefer the sweet, sweet release of global annihilation to any member of what group of people?
Democrats?
No.
Well, probably.
I'll give you a hint. Mr. Erickson is a conservative, and he's very disappointed.
Not a Republican.
Yes. Yeah, it is, in fact, the Republican presidential candidates. Just when you thought it was all over, when Mitt Romney was ready to strap the nomination to the top of his car and drive to the White House, Rick Santorum won three states on Tuesday, even though Missouri was a non-binding primary, and Minnesota has a long history of just messing with our heads.
I don't dislike Romney. I just find, as apparently most of the GOP party is, there's just nothing to kind of love about him. You know? He's just sort of, he's like porridge.
Porridge?
Yeah. You know, I don't object to it in principle, but I'm not attracted to it. Yeah.
Well, as you can think about it, you know, the global annihilating meteor has advantages as a president. I mean, it would destroy everything. But one of the things it would destroy would be wasteful government spending, so it appeals to Republicans. Yeah. Seeing the success of the meteor's campaign, Mitt Romney all of a sudden promised that he, too, would cover the earth with darkness for a millennium. Trisha, here is your next quote.
I deserve a second term, but we're not done.
Who says he deserves to be reelected because of all the things he has failed to do during his first term?
It's got to be President Obama.
Yes, it would be President Barack Obama. Well done. Yes. Obama did an interview before the Super Bowl where he pointed out that he has done a lot, but he didn't do enough, so we should reelect him so he can do more of the stuff he hasn't done yet.
The president is running for re-election like a contractor who promised you a great job, but he's blown all his deadlines, you know? He's like, well, you know, if you want those marble countertops in this country of yours done right, you gotta be patient. His campaign slogan will be, Obama, hey, we're still waiting for some parts.
Yeah. No, it's more like, you know, Obama, we have your deposit.
You know? Trisha, you're doing well. Here is your last quote.
You have to catch the ball when you're supposed to catch the ball. My husband cannot bleeping throw the ball and catch the ball at the same time.
That was very good.
Thank you.
I appreciate, Carl, especially the way you put on lingerie to do that quote for realism. It was excellent. Trisha, that was supermodel Gisele Bündchen expressing her disappointment with her husband's team at what big event last week?
That was Super Bowl Sunday.
Super Bowl Sunday, yeah, the Super Bowl. Ms. Bündchen, the Brazilian supermodel, is, of course, married to the Patriots quarterback Tom Brady, who last weekend managed to once again lose a Super Bowl to Giants quarterback Eli Manning, who is not nearly as good-looking as Tom Brady and not nearly as married to a supermodel. Now, Ms. Bündchen's feelings were understandable. It's her husband, you know. But can you imagine if your wife was chased by paparazzi who provoked her into insulting your colleagues? That would be like, it was ridiculous. He cannot bleeping do the PowerPoint presentation and change the toner cartridge at the same time.
But I don't understand why she was criticized for that. Now, like, if my wife was the quarterback of the New England Patriots.
Which I've met your wife.
Course,
she's capable of doing that.
I would be a different man, admittedly. But and that happened to her. I mean, I wouldn't be bleeping, I'll tell you that. I would be bleeping mad.
She was. And
yes. I mean, you just...
Well, would you do that? Would you throw
your mate, you know?
I know, but by throwing your mate's teammates under the bus, that was
absolutely.
The problem.
Absolutely.
As usual, though, the big story out of the Super Bowl was the ads. The most controversial was this ad for Chrysler. Did you see it? Clint Eastwood saying it was halftime in America. And Republicans say this was a veiled payback to President Obama. Does everything have to be political? I mean, was the ad with the exploding vampires a critique of Wall Street? Was the halftime show with Madonna a convoluted but effective argument to maintain Medicare? I mean... Paulie, you look puzzled. Did you not see the Super Bowl?
I didn't.
You're the one.
Yeah. I guess I was. And I can't understand being, like, looking forward to seeing a commercial.
These are really good commercials, though.
I don't care how good they are. There is no commercial that I would get, like, you know, somebody would yell, it's on! And then I would run into the other room.
Would you do it if the Three Stooges were in a commercial?
The Stooges would never have sunk so low.
I don't think that... I'm sorry, the sentence was just expounded on our stage. The Three Stooges would never sink so low.
I can't understand. A lot of places where I went the following days after the Super Bowl, and it would come up in conversation, just, you know, the grocery store, something with the checker, and they'd say, oh, do you see the Super Bowl? And I said, no, I don't watch the Super Bowl. And then they go, not the commercials? Like, no. Is it possible that I watched the commercials and not the Super Bowl? Why?
Yes, that is possible.
Okay,
people
but
do that.
Why? Right. Why would people do that?
Well, you TiVo it and you fast forward through the game parts. You know?
Gee, you guys, I hate to say it, but it's no wonder America's going downhill. Aren't we busier than that? I guess not.
No, we're not.
Okay, good, good.
It's either that or watch the GOP race.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll go for the commercials.
No, we're not going downhill. It's halftime.
And now it's time for some great commercials. Carl, how did Trisha do in our quiz?
Trisha, you had 3 correct answers, so I'll be doing the message on your voicemail or answering machine.
Well done, Trisha. Congratulations.
All right.
Thanks so much for playing.
Thank you.
Right now, panel, time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Tom, some bad health news. This week we learned the obesity rate has passed 50%, going upwards. Oy. Among what population?
50% of Americans, a subset of Americans.
Sort of a subset of Americans.
Sort of a subset of Americans.
Yes, they're here in America with us.
Dogs.
Yes, dogs.
Really? Wow.
More than half of the dogs in the United States are morbidly but adorably obese. Some signs your dog is fat. When it's time to fetch, it prefers to play no, you get it instead.
And that was one of the Super Bowl commercials this year. Was about a fat dog.
Yeah, but a fat dog. Yeah. It was adorable. You should have seen it, Paula. You would have enjoyed it.
It was really great.
My dogs are not fat, but I have a cat that is so fat that at one point I had one of those.
How fat is he?
I have one of those. I had like a, it's a gray kind of a cat, and I had a exercise ball, not that I use it, but there it was, in my living room, and the cat happened to be sitting just beside it trying to bathe itself, and I swear it looked like a match set.
Right.
Feeling like a big dog.
Right now, it is time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff, the listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi.
Hi, who's this?
This is David.
Hi, David. How are you?
Fantastic.
That's great. Me too. What's up, man? What are you doing?
Right now, I'm standing in my sister's bathroom, so I don't think about that.
Why are you standing in your sister's bathroom?
Well, she has dogs, and they're wild, and, you know, so I just don't want to disturb the show. That's all.
Are you the supposed kind of, to call 911, David,
Are you the kind of person who were in another person's bathroom to start opening up the drawers and seeing what they got? Do you do that?
Occasionally, but there's no real drawers. It's just like a little cabinet. And,
really?
Yeah,
do you want to open up the cabinet, see if there's anything really embarrassing? Let us all know.
There's girl stuff.
Oh, yeah, no, I don't know about that. No, never mind, we'll just move on. Well, welcome. Welcome to the show, David. You're going to play our game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is David's topic?
You have the right to remain something, something.
Dumb criminal stories are a staple of this show, but rarely do we address the other side, dumb cops. So this week our panelists are going to read you three stories of stupid police mishaps that'll leave you feeling much less safe. Guess the true story, you'll win Carl's voice on your home answering machine or voicemail. You ready to play?
Been waiting all week.
All right. First, let's hear from Paula Poundstone.
Police stations are not what television cop shows might lead one to believe. Never is a case wrapped up in 44 minutes. And the old good cop, bad cop technique is harder to pull off in real life. It was only when Mr. Keogh's complaint against the police department made it before a judge that officers Spiller and Oleski realized that they had neglected to assign roles prior to questioning Mr. Keogh and had inadvertently conducted a good cop, good cop scenario. Douglas Keogh was detained by police in Chicopee, Massachusetts for several hours of questioning on suspicion of burglary and released without charge. Mr. Keogh, who denies anything to do with the burglary, alleges that once escorted to the police interrogation room, Officer Tad Spiller poured him some coffee and brought him two Kit Kat bars and a Butterfinger from the vending machine. After 30 minutes of questioning, Officer Spiller left the room. Minutes later, Officer Andy Oleski entered carrying a quart container of Ben and Jerry's Cherry Garcia and a spoon. Mr. Keogh consumed the ice cream and answered a few more questions. Officer Oleski left, and again, Officer Spiller soon entered, offering Mr. Keogh a vintage 40s bomber jacket and a gift certificate for a 10-minute airport chair massage. When Officer Oleski returned and Mr. Keogh asked to call his lawyer, Officer Oleski sent a limo to pick up his lawyer and requested the driver to supply a nice bottle of champagne. I was there for hours. I never really knew why. I thought maybe one of them was going to propose, says Mr. Keogh.
Good cop, good cop. Your next story of cops of the Keystone variety comes from Roxanne Roberts.
Harrisburg police officer Steve Franklin couldn't believe his ears. The four women in the next booth at Denny's, who he described as burglars dressed as nuns, were planning an early morning heist just about to happen. They'd obviously cased the joint. One would grab the good jewelry, another the silver, the third what they guessed was a valuable painting, and the fourth was a lookout.
The ringleader barked, "I want to be in and out in 5 minutes. We've got two more houses to hit." Franklin tailed their van, called for backup, and then, lights flashing and guns drawn, arrested the robbers as they walked out with the goods. Except, as WGHB-TV reported, the robbery was really an estate sale, and the women were actually Sisters of the Blessed Sacrament, buying merchandise for their church resale shop. The nuns, of course, made the weekend news. Denny's donated a year's worth of breakfasts to the order, and Officer Franklin is now on desk duty and volunteering once a week at the thrift shop.
A gang of burglars dressed as nuns turned out to be nuns. Your last story comes from Tom Baudet.
The private longings of an anonymous British probation officer can only be imagined. So let's try. For one thing, being anonymous. Why couldn't he have a name like Terry or Brad? Our anonymous probation officer thought his dream had come true when he was assigned to after-hours plainclothes duty in a crime-ridden business district of Sussex, an area under intensive video surveillance by a local police directorate. Anonymous's radio crackled. There was a suspicious character acting suspiciously in an unnamed alley. "Why, I'm in an unnamed alley," replied Anonymous. "Which way did he go?" The director told him. Anonymous followed. "Nothing." "There he is again," called the director. "I'm hot on his heels," said our man. He kept running, feet clapping, heart pounding, live on TV with the director directing. "I can't believe this is happening to me," he thought presciently, because it wasn't. When his boss walked into the directorate, he recognized the shadowy character on the video screens as none other than Anonymous, who had been chasing himself down the unnamed alleys of Sussex. Oh, everyone had a good laugh, except our anonymous probation officer. What becomes of him? Perhaps living in a quiet country cottage under an assumed name like Terry or Brad.
All right. Here are your three stories from Paula Poundstone, two cops in Massachusetts who forgot that one of them needed to play the bad cop. From Roxanne Roberts, a cop who mistook a group of nuns for burglars pretending to be nuns. And from Tom Baudet, a cop who spent a good 20 minutes in England chasing himself. Which of these is the real story of inefficient police work?
I'm going to go with Roxanne's.
You're going to go with Roxanne's story of the cop who was convinced that those nuns were really burglars, dressed as nuns.
Yeah, I've met a couple cops, so...
No. You wouldn't put it by them.
Yeah.
Well, we spoke to somebody who was on top of this particular story.
A police sergeant came into the control room and just burst out into fits of laughter when he realized that the suspect and the officer were actually the same person and he'd been chasing himself around for 20 minutes.
That was Sarita Lund. She's the editor of Police Magazine in the UK, and they were tipped off to the story by the Sussex Police. That is, of course, the story of the policeman who was chasing himself on closed-circuit TV. I'm so sorry. Obviously, Roxanne has fooled you as she has fooled so many. However, so you didn't win. You did earn a point for Roxanne, which I know she'll be thrilled. And thank you so much for playing.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Follow me.
And now the game where people who've done a lot of great things do something else. Kurt Elling is often called the greatest male jazz singer alive, but for many years he was the Susan Lucci of jazz. He'd be nominated for a Grammy every year, and then he would not win a Grammy every year. Another point of comparison to Ms. Lucci, the man rocks a formal gown. He got his first Grammy last year. He's also a favorite to win his second this year for his latest record at The Gate. We are so pleased to welcome Chicago's own Kurt Elling. Kurt, great to have you here. Thank you. So did you develop this desire to sing jazz early? Was this something that you did?
No, not until late adolescence, we would call it, I guess, scientifically.
Right.
God, that's when I took up smoking.
Some people call it that.
Yeah, but that wasn't where you were going, weren't you?
No,
you had another
my father was a Kapellmeister or a church musician, so I took that from him and a lot of sort of the craft of music, and then I got turned on to jazz, and then when I came back here to go to the University of Chicago, for divinity school, which is another whole left turn, I was sitting in clubs at night.
Right.
And I'd come out of nowhere and do my little thing. And all these cats would just, hey, you sound great, and what's your name, and come back next week. And these old cats would put their arms around my shoulder and say, you're with us. You're with, over and over again, this happened to me. In Chicago, it happened to me. In Minneapolis, it happened to me in New York. These beautiful, established artists would really surround me and remind me and pull me in. Never happened to me in divinity school.
Really? Strangely.
Never one. Oh, young man, you're with us. Come over here.
No.
You know, never happened.
So now you've been recording jazz for a while. You've been, God knows how many records, a first Grammy Award last year, another nomination this year. Top of the game. One of the things you're known for is your ability to scat. You're good at.
Some people think.
Can you like talk in scat? Can you like, if I were to ask you a question now, you could answer in scat?
If you need me to.
Oh,
but it
go.
Won't be
so,
coherent.
All right, well, here you go. So what do you think of the state of jazz in America?
Oh, well, oh, you know, because it sounds a little Danish.
It does.
Yeah. Clark Terry. Yeah.
Is that the secret? Yeah. Oh, my God.
It is the secret.
Is that all you guys have been doing? You've been deciding what bar to go to after the gig
Clark
in
Terry
Danish?
Clark Terry lived over there long enough that he figured out that's how you, because he had a whole bit he does called mumble. So here's and then I go to Denmark and everybody understands me. They don't think I'm scatting at all. They just think I'm speaking. It's
right.
Crazy.
Your latest album, The Gate, actually has some covers of some popular songs, Norwegian Wood by the Beatles and Steppin' Out by Joe Jackson.
Jazz is the ultimate syncretic art form.
Well, let's see. Because we want to help you. We want to help you to a wider audience. So here's a song, and we don't know if this is going to work. We want to see if you can do this in your style. This is a song by Kesha. Here's the original version. I'm just going to say, before anybody scoffs, this woman has made so much money, there's a dollar sign in her name, okay? So we wanted to see, we've given you the lyrics, and we wanted to see if you could actually do a Kurt Elling cover of that.
I could, but you know, when I scanned the lyrics,
yeah,
before having heard the throbbing, salacious, money-making beat that is so prominent in successful music these days, I scanned this, and it actually sounded like a tawdry Roberta Flack to me.
Is there any other kind of Roberta Flack? Seriously. But no, go, all right, go on.
Tonight we're going hard, just like the world is ours, right?
Right.
We're tearing it apart, pa-pa-pa-pa-pa. You know we're superstars. We are who we are.
Bravo, Kurt Elling, ladies and gentlemen. I'm telling you, they like it. Next, we've got a little song called Friday we want to give you. Never mind.
In jazz speak, is there sort of Chicago jazz speak and New York jazz speak? And I'm thinking this is all jargon.
Stuff goes around, but it's definitely fairly regulated at this point.
All right, I'm going to do this.
Okay, say something in jazz.
Yeah, say something. Say something in jazz, please.
Well, dig. Wow. What about which would you have me parle?
I have no idea what you just said, but it sounded very cool. Well, Kurt Elling, we're delighted to have you with us. We've asked you here to play a game we're calling...
Dude, first thing you need to do, get a drum machine.
So, you got another Grammy nomination. Congrats. But seriously, if you're ever going to be in the part of the awards broadcast that people get to watch, you're going to have to get up into the pop category. So, we're going to ask you three questions about the other nominees this year. Get two right, you win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice in their voicemail. Carl, who is Kurt Elling playing for?
Kurt is playing for Tara McDonald of Boca Raton, Florida.
All right, ready to play?
Tara, I need you to start rubbing your commemorative Newt Gingrich Chia Pet for luck.
All right. Here's your first question. Bruno Mars is up for Best Album, Record of the Year, Song of the Year, Boyish Smile of the Year, you name it. How did Bruno Mars get his start in show business? Was it A, as a 9-year-old soloist for the group Up With People, B, as a 4-year-old Elvis Presley impersonator, or C, as a bear at Disneyland's Country Bear Jamboree attraction?
I'm going to go with the Elvis impersonator.
You're going to go with the Elvis
impersonator? Because I have routinely seen his photo and said, that is so Elvis, with the cocked head and the T-shirt with the rolled-up thing and the...
You're right. He's got to start as... He grew up in Honolulu. His father played a band for tourists. They did all the standards. It was a novelty act, and they had him come out as a 4-year-old and sing like Elvis, and he was filmed in the 1992 movie Honeymoon in Vegas. Here's Bruno Mars at the age of 4.
At a certain point, you're going to want to walk away from something like that.
No. You're going to want to move on.
You are.
Next question, the British singer Adele, of course, we all know, up for a bunch of Grammys, favored to win. But her brief career has not been without controversy. Who claimed that they were old royalties from her hit songs? Was it A, her ex-boyfriend, because he broke her heart and thus inspired her songs? B, the band The Deltones, who say she's profiting by people confusing her, Adele, with them, The Deltones. Or C, her sixth grade English teacher who helped her lose her Eliza Doolittle-like accent.
It's the boyfriend.
The boyfriend?
Yeah.
You sure?
Yeah, boyfriends are like that.
They are. You're right. That's amazing.
See, that chia pet is coming in handy.
That is. You know that Adele sings songs about heartbreak. The guy who did break her heart said, you owe me some money. She told him to get lost. All right. You're doing really well here. You're doing really, really well. Your last question, indie band Bon Iver is up for Record of the Year as well. Band leader Justin Vernon says the idea for the band came to him when? A, when he was reading the Harry Potter books out loud to his kids and he started singing in his Dobby the House Elf voice. B, he said the vision for the band came to him while he was laid up with mononucleosis and watching Northern Exposure on TV. Or C, it started as a U2 tribute band and somebody said he was even, quote, Bonoer than Bono.
Doesn't Bon Iver mean good winter?
It might.
Think about Northern Exposure.
No. I was thinking about Northern Exposure and...
I mean, you already won.
And so. Mono as a combination.
Well, I mean, you're flat on your back.
Yeah.
And you're watching a show about a very cold, desolate place.
Okay, I'm going with Roxanne on this thing.
I think you're wise to do so. She's right and so are you. Yes, that's what happened. He was up in his cabin. He was watching Northern Exposure, and there was an episode of the show in which they came out and they started wishing each other a bon hiver, or good winter.
Oh, well, there you
and
go.
That's the name of the band, and it went from there. Carl, how did Kurt Elling do in our quiz?
Kurt, you had 3 correct answers, so you win for Tara McDonald.
Well done,
hey, Tara.
Well done. Kurt Elling's latest record is The Gate. It's up for a Grammy this weekend. He's also won a Grammy for his fabulous record devoted to you. Kurt Elling, thank you so much for being with us. Kurt Elling, ladies and gentlemen.
You dig everything in life, everything you've seen, everywhere you've been, you've been thinking all of the time.
Thanks, everybody. In just a minute, Carl gets nominated for a Best New Artist, Grimy, in our Listener Limerick Challenge. That was Grammy, but with the vowel change, so it sounded like rhyme, Grimy. Just pointing it out. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Tom, the scientific journal Nature published a commentary last week saying that a grave threat to our health should be regulated as a dangerous and toxic substance like alcohol or tobacco. What is it?
Well, coffee would be too easy.
That would be too easy. Although sometimes coffee has it in it, depending on your taste. People poison themselves by putting it in their coffee?
Milk?
No.
Sugar.
Yes, sugar.
Sugar, seriously.
Sugar. Sugar is a poison. It doesn't just make us fat, say the scientists in Nature. It's that eating it in the quantities we do nowadays is actually poisoning us. The problem, they say, is that humans evolved to love sugar, but prehistorically we couldn't easily get it. Honey, an example they give, was guarded by bees, right? So you couldn't get it all the time. So one solution they're suggesting, you can keep selling cupcakes on every street corner, but every cupcake must be topped by angry scorpions.
That wouldn't keep me off it.
Really?
No.
You were like, ow, ow, that was a good that was a good cupcake.
And I'll bet you the bees didn't keep the Neanderthals out of the honey.
Probably either. Not. Well, it made them think about it. We were talking about this because you remember what was 40, 50 years ago when the medical reports first came out that, you know, tobacco was bad for you, say, and at the time people were like, oh, come on. So is that where we are now? Well, like 20 years from now, we'll be telling our grandkids, well, you're not going to believe this, but when we were younger, you could eat sugar on airplanes. Oh, for a while, they had sugar-eating sections. If you sat near them, you'd get, like, secondhand cavities. Let me tell you, it was terrible.
I'll tell you something. If sugar is poisonous, then I am the strongest woman in the world.
No kidding. Yeah, I'm Iron Man.
Yeah. I love sugar.
Poison seems harsh. Poison? Poison? Is that like in action movies, like the villains are going to be slipping sugar into the hero's cocktail? I've poisoned you, Mr. Bond. No, I expect you to diabetes.
What's this idea of poison? Like, somebody's going to poison James Bond with sugar, and then they're going to call back to their headquarters and say he should be keeling over in about another 50 years.
Yeah. Paula... Paula, according to the New York Times, a number of cities in Europe are arguing over which of them has the honor of hosting what?
Can I have a hint?
Yes.
I never ask for a hint.
They're trying to take the title away from the city of Pisa.
That they have the most crooked building.
Exactly right.
Oh,
other
boy.
Cities say that they have the leaningest tower. Thanks to some renovations in Pisa, the Leaning Tower there, it's no longer the leaning-est tower, so other towers are vying for the title. One observer pointed out that the severe lean in the Tower of London, for instance, but that observer was just really drunk and lying on the ground. Turns out, dangerous flaws are all the rage in the European tourism business. Buildings all over Europe are vying to be named the toxicest mold, the flamingest roof they want. Poor Italy, though, in one year they lost the leaningest tower and the sexual harassiest prime minister. So no reason to visit Italy anymore.
I love Berlusconi. What was it this week he said, I'm not a playboy, I'm a playman?
That's what he said. He was defending his record. Gave a long interview.
Doesn't having the leaniest
tower...
It's sort of a, you know, finite thing because at some point the thing is just going to go over.
That's the trick. You want it to lean, but not too much because if it leans too much, then you have the falling downiest tower.
It's like our chairs in the fourth grade.
Yeah, it's like, who can go back? Who
exactly. Exactly. You're cool if you can lean back, but if the chair goes all the way, then you are a dork of the month. That's bad.
Tom, this week, the New York Times detailed a trip to one of Europe's most exciting theme parks. What is it?
Well, Euro Disney's the low-hanging fruit, but that's probably not it.
No, the reason they wrote about it, it was because the person who this was built in honor of, it was his 200th birthday.
This week? Oh, that must be the Dickens.
Yes. They went to Dickens World.
There's a Dickens World.
There's a Dickens World.
Is that kind of like Dolly World with... Oliver.
It's a little bit like that.
The ride, the Oliver Twist. I've seen that. Yeah.
Who hasn't opened a copy, say, of Oliver Twist and said to themselves, if only I could journey to that miserable orphanage. Well, now, thanks to the Dickens World theme park in England, you can. Do you like soot? They've got it.
Yeah.
Do you like chemical smell pots that waft the stench of organ meats and rotting cabbage around the park? They got that, too.
Seriously.
Do you like powder sugar-covered fried cholera balls? No, they don't have those. The creators are proud of the Great Expectations Flume Ride, which is real and really does splash down into a sewer. Some visitors have been offended by the signs on some of the rides that read, "You must be at least this hungry to ride this ride."
I mean, what do we answer that with? Like a smallpox farm in Maine? Or
We were trying to think of what would be more attractive, like Kafka World. You just stand in line. You never know what for, and you never get there.
And sometimes people cut in front of you.
Yeah. Throw your hands in the air if they say it's trying to rage your frigid air for food, glorious food, corn ballers and buzz.
busters. And throw your hands in the sky. It's police finest for the boss. So form a line for who glorious.
Coming up is Lightning Fill in the Blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Or you can click the Contact Us link on our website, which is waitwait.npr.org. There you can find out about attending our weekly live shows here at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago. And you can check out the How to Do Everything podcast. This week, we help the iPhone's voice recognition software understand what Scottish people are saying. It's a problem. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, Peter. This is Molly Yarnovich from Fremont, California.
Hey, how are things in beautiful Fremont?
Oh, they're beautiful. It was 73 today.
Oh, stop it. What do you do there?
I stay at home with my 2-year-old daughter, Sarah.
Oh, really? And what does she do all day?
We play outside.
Oh, that's fun.
It's nice.
Well, welcome to the show, Molly. Now, Carl Castle is going to read you 3 news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly on 2 of the limericks, you will be a winner. Ready to go?
Ready.
Here is your first limerick.
Being nice to my wife's self-defeating, and the joy of the chores done is fleeting. She thinks it's implied that there's guilt that I hide. When I'm nice, she assumes I've been...
cheating.
Yes. Do not bother making your wife breakfast in bed or buying her thoughtful little gifts to brighten her day, because a new study suggests she will immediately assume that it's because you're cheating on her. So word of advice, skip the roses this Valentine's Day. And when your wife asks you why you didn't buy her flowers, you can say, because honey, this year I'm not cheating on you. The study, by the way, you'll be thrilled to hear this, was paid for by the Kellogg's cereal company.
Why Kellogg? If they run out of things to
spend
their money on?
Well, they're researching for their new cereal. It's called Philander Flakes.
Who from Kellogg's called? Snap, Crackle, or Pop?
Molly, here's your next limerick.
It's the brick oven lager I fear. These microbrews really do veer. Extra onions and cheese, pepperoni too, please. How did pizza get into my...
beer.
Yes! Pizza has but one flaw. It does not make you drunk. But now there's pizza beer. According to its creators, pizza beer tastes, quote, the way it would if you eat a chunk of pizza, then take a swig of beer. Which, frankly, we could have guessed from the name. Inspired by the innovation, the Budweiser company is hard at work trying to make a beer that tastes like beer. All right, here's your last limerick.
In Iceland, some towns hold just dozens, so our website has red flags a-buzzin'. We have the equations for testing relations to keep you from dating your...
cousin.
Yes! Iceland, the island nation of Iceland, is a small place, just got about 300,000 people, so it often happens you're on a first date, you like somebody's looks, and you realize it's because you see those looks every morning in your mirror. Fortunately, there's a new registry website that helps people make sure that they do not end up dating their own cousins. Until now, Icelanders wouldn't discover the truth until they were taken to their own house to meet their new girlfriend's parents. Carl, how did Molly do on our quiz?
Well, you cannot do better, Peter. Molly, you had 3 correct answers, so you win our prize.
Well done. Congratulations. Thank you so much for playing, Molly.
Thank you.
Now it's time for our final game, Lightning Fill-in-the-Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as they can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
Roxanne Roberts has the lead, Peter. She has 4 points. Tom Beaudet has 3. Paula Poundstone has 2.
All right, so it's
Let me get this straight. It would appear that I'm losing.
Yes. But not by much. Here you go, Paula. You're in 3rd place. You're up first. The clock will start when they begin your first question. Fill-in-the-blank. An appeals court in California ruled this week that Prop 8, which bans blank, is unconstitutional.
Same-sex marriage.
Right. Religious groups were outraged by President Obama's new policy requiring church-affiliated employers to provide coverage for blank.
Abortions?
No, birth control.
Oh, darn it.
In an attempt to prevent conflict with Israel, the U.S. imposed harsher sanctions on blank this week.
Harsher sanctions on Iran.
I don't know if I'm going to give you that point. This week, the Pentagon issued new rules that will allow blank to serve closer to combat.
Women.
Right. A Montana man who led police in a chase this week told the police he had done it because he blanked.
I don't know.
He had always wanted to be in a police chase.
Oh, that's right. I knew that.
Beyonce and Jay-Z filed an application to trademark their baby's name, blank, to use for a line of baby products.
Ivy Blue.
Yeah, it's Blue Ivy Carter. Very
Blue
good.
Ivy.
Zalman King, the creator of the late-night Showtime series Blank, died this week at the age of 70.
The Zalman King story.
No, it's called Red Shoe Diaries. This week, 4-year-old Dustin Cruz of Wisconsin got the gift he'd always wanted, a blank.
Fat dog.
No. The 4-year-old got the gift he'd always wanted, a Kohler double flush self-toilet with a self-lowering lid.
Yep.
We encourage you to Google 4-year-old and toilet because the image of this little boy's face as he embraces his new fancy toilet is the most joyful and most inexplicable thing you will see this week.
No, it's not inexplicable at all, and I am using it as kind of a carrot with my son in terms of grades this year.
If his grades, he can get his grades up, he can get the toilet of his dreams.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Carl, how did Paula do in our quiz?
Paula had 4 correct answers for 8 more points. She now has 10 points, and Paula has the lead.
Well done. All right. Tom, you're up next, fill in the blank. On Thursday, President Obama announced he was granting 10 states exemptions from parts of the blank education law.
No Child Left Behind.
Right. After a recent surge of violence in Homs and other cities, the U.S. closed its embassy in blank.
Syria.
Right. Executive Karen Handel of the Susan G. Komen Foundation resigned this week amid the controversy over funding blank.
Planned Parenthood.
Right. On Thursday, the FBI released its 191-page file on late Apple co-founder blank.
Steve Jobs.
Right. A California man attempted to rob a bank this week by brandishing a blank.
By brandishing a checkbook.
By brandishing a bag of apple pies. To mark her 60 years in the throne, this week blank announced details of her Diamond Jubilee tour.
That might be the Queen of England.
Yes, Queen Elizabeth. Fumble the Chihuahua, Terrier mix, edged out an Australian Shepherd mix, named Aberdeen to win MVP at this year's blank.
The Westminster dog.
No, the Puppy Bowl.
Oh, geez.
The Puppy Bowl. A fraternity member is suing over injuries he sustained when one of his frat brothers blanked.
Scratched his smelly jeans.
No. He incurred injuries when one of his fraternity brothers tried to shoot a bottle rocket out of his butt. I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, well, if your fraternity brother puts a bottle rocket up his butt, then you just get out of the line of fire, right? But that's not what happened. Frat brother Travis Hughes tried to light a bottle rocket out of his own butt. It exploded prematurely, and that startled his frat brother, Lewis Helmsberg III, and made him fall off the frat house's deck. Right? Helmsberg is now suing the fraternity for his injuries. The fraternity plans to mount a complicated legal defense known as give Helmsberg beer bongs till he passes out. Carl, how did Tom do in our quiz?
Tom had 5 correct answers for 10 more points. He now has 13 points, and Tom has taken the lead.
All right. So, Roxanne, this is for the game. How much does Roxanne need to win?
5 correct answers.
5. Nothing for you, Roxanne. Nothing at all. Here we go, Roxanne. This is for the game. Federal officials announced a $25 billion settlement over foreclosure abuses with the 5 biggest blank companies on Thursday.
Lending.
Yes, mortgage companies. On Thursday, politicians in blank reached an agreement on the new austerity deal.
Greece.
Right. For the first time in over 30 years, regulators approved 2 new blanks in the U.S.
I don't know.
Nuclear reactors. A Mississippi state representative has introduced a bill to change the name of the Gulf of Mexico to blank.
America's bathtub.
No, to the Gulf of America. Vermont police officers discovered prisoners had been secretly decorating their police cruisers with blank.
With tinsel.
I know this one.
Yeah, good what? For you.
Images of pigs.
Yes, pigs. In her memoir released this week.
Oh, on the decals.
Yes.
That's right.
Too late for you, though.
Yeah, I know.
In her memoir released this week, former White House intern Mimi Alford details her affair with blank.
JFK.
Yes, NBC and the NFL both apologized after performer MIA blanked during the halftime show.
She gave the audience a finger.
Yes, she did. Yes. Police in Southern Illinois have stopped a murder plot in which the culprit planned to frame blank.
To frame the Pope.
No, he was going to frame the victim's cat. It would have been the perfect crime. First, you surprise your victim in the bath, you throw in a radio, kill him. Then you sprinkle cat litter around the tub so the owner's cat gets fingered for the crime. However, the police stopped the crime before it could happen, and it never would have worked because everybody knows that if the cat did it, it would frame the dog. Carl, did Roxanne do well enough to win?
She needed 5 correct answers. Roxanne had 4 correct answers for a total of 12 points.
No.
So with 13 points, Tom Baudet is this week's champion.
That's amazing.
This never happened.
In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists to predict who will finally step in and save the GOP. But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and the National Association of Realtors, an advocate for home ownership. More at houselogic.com/homeownership. The Poetry Foundation, celebrating 100 years of Poetry Magazine, online at poetryfoundation.org. And Progressive Insurance, with more than 30,000 local independent agents. Information available at progressive.com. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago in association with Urgent Haircut Productions, Doug Berman, the benevolent beach bum. Philip Goedeker writes our limericks. Our house manager is Don Hall. Our assistant house manager is Jessica McLeod. Our cyborg intern is Kate Casey. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Engineers include Lester Larchick and Muhammad Mao. Thanks to John Zajac here at Chase Bank. BJ Liederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Eva Walchover and Emily Ecton. Technical direction is from Robert Newhouse and Lorna White. Our senior producer is Mr. Ian Chillog. The executive producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Senior Michael Danforth. Now, panel, who will finally swoop in and save the GOP? Paula Poundstone.
Giselle Bundchen, who will say to the Republicans, my husband can't throw the ball and win the election at the same time.
Tom Baudet.
We're going to need one part Newt Gingrich, one part Rudy Giuliani, one part Arnold Schwarzenegger. We're talking Vladimir Putin.
And Roxanne Roberts.
Jeb Bush, who legally changed his name last week to Jeb Jesus Reagan Lincoln.
Well, if any of those people save the GOP panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell
Thank
Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Paula Poundstone, Tom Baudet, Roxanne Roberts. Thanks all of you for listening. I'm Peter Sagal. We'll see you next week, Salt Lake City. Be there. This is NPR.